Well, there was a time not that long ago when taking a picture meant you went out and bought some film, you loaded it into your camera, you waited until the roll was finished, and then you sent it away to get developed. And it could be days, weeks, or sometimes even longer before you saw the photos you took. Well, that now, of course, it's all instantaneous, and you can immediately see what you took, whether it's good or not, and if you want to keep it, and that's all great. But one thing has not changed. We still need to know how to use the camera in order to get those good shots. And we're lucky to have Jack Socha with us. Jack is a great resource. He's a photography instructor, and he's the author of How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. And it's always great to have him with us to share what he knows. Jack, thank you for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Oh, it's always a joy to be with you folks because I get such great questions, and there's just so much going on in the world of digital photography. It is moving as fast as PCs were moving 20 years ago, where you turn around and something new is always coming out.
Yeah, it really, really, really is amazing. And I, you know, one of the things that I think about this winter as we look outside, I bet you if you look outside, what are you going to see? You're going to see a lot of snow, aren't you?
Well, we're now calling Spring Grove, which is across the river in Minnesota. I live near that Siberia Grove because, I mean, it is really looking, there are 12-foot piles of snow on the sides of the back roads and things like that. It is really something.
And we've got the Lake Superior ice caves. Those are accessible for the first time. We've got snowy owls out there. So there's a lot of great winter landscape photography going on. And I'm wondering about some good tips for taking outdoor photos in the wintertime. Have you got some ideas?
Actually, I do. There's a couple of things. You probably are not going to get the best results if you leave your camera on decision-free. You should put it on one of the settings. Frequently, it's called P for program, that still allows automatic exposure, but it allows you access to my one of my favorite buttons called the plus-minus exposure control, which will lighten and darken the picture.
Ah.
Because a lot of times, it just your meter just cannot handle all that snow. So if you can do that, try taking some shots lighter or darker. The other thing that will be really important to look at is look into your menu. Again, you've got to take it off decision-free for the thing called the white balance or the automatic white balance. Chances are you're going to want to take it off and try one of the other settings, either sunlight or shade or something. Because, for example, one day I went out there and there was that really weird blue snow light look,
mm-hmm.
like at the ice cave.
Yeah.
Well, the automatic white balance tries to turn it into looking like it's white.
Oh.
And you don't want that.
No, you don't want it.
So you can frequently, if you turn off the automatic white balance, which is sometimes done by setting it for the daylight setting.
Okay.
Because that assumes, the camera assumes you're looking at regular daylight, and if there is an odd color, it will stay there. But you're going to have to experiment with those settings until you find the one that you like.
Jack Socha, our guest today, author of How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. If you have a question or comment or maybe an experience to share with your photography, I hope you'll join us. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. And hey, if you've got a nice winter photo that you took and you want to share it, put it up on the Facebook page.
I've rapidly been changing the look of the website. Those of you who go to acpress.com, you'll find it looks a lot different because a lot's been happening the past few months. For one thing, I'm still teaching how to use your digital camera in the greater La Crosse area, but we're now doing it independently at the photo studios of Bob Metcalf, who's a well-known local photographer. He and I are working together on those classes. The reason is that the local technical college has discontinued all of their non-credit classes. And also because the last camera store in the area closed last year, the last full-service one, there's no place to go to get that kind of instruction. So if you go to our website, you'll see a press release about that, plus a calendar of when the classes are scheduled. They're normally two classes of 2.5 hours, just as they were over at the tech school. And we're having a lot of fun with them.
It sounds great. And you have the second edition of your book out, too.
It is at the printer. We had a slight delay on it simply because there's been a shift in emphasis on what people are buying. Mm-hmm. 85% of the folks taking the classes are using digital SLRs. So I asked my wonderful wife, Alice, who lays out books, to please put a digital SLR on the front and a point-and-shoot on the back, mm-hmm. as opposed to a point-and-shoot on the front and a digital SLR on the back, just because, and also I changed the introduction somewhat and a couple of things in the book to reflect this growing interest. With the classes, when we used to teach them at the school, we had point-and-shoot users and digital SLR users in the same class, and it wasn't working out. So now we're offering separate classes for those with point-and-shoots and those with digital SLRs.
Well, I've heard that the point-and-shoot, the sales of those has dropped drastically because of the phones.
Yes, I just saw an ad for a Nokia that has a HD video and a 20-megapixel sensor. Now, I just did an article, I thought I'd put it up yesterday, thinking about you guys, sorting out the different kinds of cameras that are out there. There's low-end point-and-shoots, there's higher-end point-and-shoots, there's so-called bridge cameras that look like an SLR, but you can't take the lens off, and then there are ones that look like a compact camera that you can take the lens off, and SLRs. And I'm discovering that people are, they're not sure what they should be getting for their needs.
Yeah, and so you're going to be addressing that in your book.
It'll be in the book. It's on the website. There's an article describing these right now to help you. When you go to talk to a person who's selling cameras, to better get an idea what these things are that they're showing you.
Yeah.
And I just see that the people with digital SLRs are coming on strong. They're not as expensive as they used to be. And these people have a little higher aspirations as to what they want to photograph.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So we also now have an advanced DSLR class as well. Bob is a well-known professional photographer, and he picks up where I tend to fade out. So between the, I like to stick with the real beginners because there's so much basic stuff you simply have to learn, and he picks up with a little more advanced topics.
Dennis in Wautoma has a question or a comment. Hi, Dennis. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I was recently forced by my children to abandon my film SLR when they purchased a new digital SLR and confiscated my old camera. So reading the book and everything, it just seems so confusing. What would be the one tip you could give someone like me?
Well, the first thing to keep in mind is that there's about 20% or 25% that you really have to understand. And the rest of it, if you don't get to it, or get to it later, that's okay. The first things to understand are what is resolution and how to set it for the highest size, the biggest size, and what is quality settings and how to set that for the best quality. They're also, if you get the camera off decision-free, learn to play with the ISO, which is equivalent to like different kinds of film in the camera, so that you can experience different qualities of that. If you can get those things figured out where you always have it for the largest picture, the least compression, which means the highest quality, and you can find out which ISOs you like the best, that's a good start.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling.
And that's basically in the book, because the first few chapters of the book, we say, these are things, I don't care whether it's a point-and-shoot that costs $65 or a $3,000 digital SLR, these are things you absolutely have to know. And then as the book progresses, it gets more into the weeds.
Yeah. Okay, so, and that's your book, How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary Jane in Arborvita up next. Hi, Mary Jane.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks.
I have a question. Oh.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
All right. I do have a question, and I know I already have to take my camera off of decision free, but it's capturing the beautiful sun in the morning or in the evening when it's that vibrant pink or vibrant orange color. When I take a picture, it comes out white.
Yeah, that's
so I don't capture any of it. And I'm going to take the answer off the air.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, once again, like the snow, your culprit is your automatic white balance. That is something that is in the menu, and you normally have to take it off decision-free, and you'll be given a choice of tungsten light bulbs, fluorescent bulbs, usually daylight, cloudy days, and things like that. I would suggest putting it on the so-called daylight setting, because then the camera assumes that the light out there is regular, beautiful, normal daylight, and it won't change anything. And so if the color is different, then it'll stay that way. But you may want to experiment with one or two of the other white balance selections besides that one. And also, again, your plus-minus exposure control, which lightens and darkens the picture, you may want to darken it slightly to get more color saturation. But those are really good controls to come to become very, very familiar with.
Yeah, very good. Thank you again for calling. You can join in, too, by the way. The number for you to call with your question or comment, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Duane in St. Paul, Minnesota, you are next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. Hey, I was wondering, I've been looking for a decent camera for shooting my kid. I got three kids, and they all play soccer. And I went out, I was like convinced I was going to go buy a decent camera, and I went to a bunch of different camera shops, and I walked away from all the camera shops so confused. I didn't know what to buy, so I never even bought a camera. I was wondering, is there a decent camera out there that you could recommend where I could get some decent shots of my kids playing sporting events with the action?
That's a huge question, and the joke used to be a few years ago, either spend $5,000 or wait 5 years, because most consumer cameras do not have the large enough lens opening to capture indoor action. They may be able to capture soccer stuff outdoors, but that was 5 years ago. Things are getting better. What I would suggest you do is look into a digital single lens reflex camera. It could be a Canon, it could be a Nikon, it could be a Minolta, because they tend to have higher ISOs, which means they can shoot at higher shutter speeds. But the other part is you may want to look into something besides the so-called kit lens, the standard lens they give you, because that lens tends to be a little on the small aperture side when you zoom out. And so you might want to ask the salesperson, what lenses do you recommend for shooting action with this camera body, and see if that works for you.
What would be to get a decent camera, I mean, you know, on the retail side, what are you looking at spending? I mean, these guys were $1,200-$1,300 after a decent lens. Is that reasonable? Or
well, it's reasonable for the kind of action that you shoot that you want to shoot. If you're just shooting scenics and stationary subjects, you might be able to get by better with, say, a $500 outfit. But again, to shoot the higher specification kind of action you're talking about requires a higher specification lens. That's why you see these Sports Illustrated photographers with the $2,000 gray lenses out there.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Okay, thank you very much.
Yep, good luck. And just from experience, Duane, I can tell you that that better quality lens makes a huge difference. And my own daughter plays basketball indoors, of course, and then she plays soccer outside. And with good lenses on a decent SLR, you really can get some memorable shots.
Yeah, chances are your lens will outlast the camera body. You may buy a new camera body a couple of years later and put the same lens on it.
Yep, absolutely. Gene in Oshkosh. Hello, thanks for calling.
Gentlemen, good morning. One of my daughters bought my wife a camera, and I'm rather idiot here on the camera thing, and I'd just like to give you the make and the number and tell me how decent it is and what kind of camera you would call it. It's a Canon PowerShot A1000IS.
Okay, now does that one? I'm trying to look that one up here. Does that one have a removable lens, or is the lens fixed on and non-removable?
It's fixed on.
Okay, that's a good quality middle range camera.
Point and shoot. It's a point and shoot.
It's essentially a point and shoot, but it's not the lowest priced one available, and it's not the most expensive one available. But generally speaking, they have a good lens. And when used properly, used within their limitations, they work rather well. The limitations will be, once again, you're not going to get a lot of really fast action shots with those kind of cameras. But for portraits, scenery, street scenes, what you might call general photography, they're very good.
Do you have them develop? Do the pictures get developed at a Walgreens or whatever?
It is one way of doing it. You can take the storage card, a little SD card that stores the computer files that the camera generates, take it to your local lab, and they will make prints for you, which, generally speaking, look better and last longer than trying to do them at home on an inkjet printer.
Yep.
Very, very good. Thank you, gentlemen.
Yep, thanks very much for calling. Or you can just store them online.
Right, exactly. Yeah, there's all kinds of places you can put them. Some people still like prints. And every once in a while you get a particularly good shot, and you can get a surprisingly good print made for, you know, just a few dollars at a local lab.
Yep, absolutely. Tom and Nina, thanks for calling. Hello.
Hi there. I'm a fisherman. I have a point-and-shoot that I carry in my fly fishing vest pocket, and I like to take pictures of streams. And the camera that I have does not have a UV filter on it. Could I use just a UV film and kind of tape it over the lens? Would that be a good substitute for my underwater camera?
Well, are you trying to just keep water from getting splashed on it, or what's the story on that?
Well, is it so that I get the effect, to cut down on the glare off of the surfaces of water? So you can, like, you use UV, or you use polarized glasses.
Yeah. Okay.
In water.
You're,
can I use a film?
Yeah.
The thing that reduces glare is a polarizing filter, which rotates, and that has to be rotated until the glare goes away. So I don't think you're going to get a lot of real good luck out of that. In fact, you might do just as well with a pair of polarized sunglasses and just put them in front of the lens, frankly.
Yeah. There you go. If you had maybe a little more, if you had a kind of a higher-end camera, you probably can get the filter that would actually affix to the camera lens.
Yeah, especially if the lens retracts into the body, you may have some real trouble.
Yep. There you go, Tom. Thanks for calling. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Bruce in Deerfield, your turn. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, how you doing?
Great, thanks for calling.
I don't have a question, but I would like to just sort of share a tip. I'm 66 years old. I've been taking pictures all my life, and I've built board the family. And so my big problem has always been in sharing pictures with people. And a few years ago, what I started doing was every year I would make a calendar.
Oh, I seem to have lost him.
Hello?
Are you there? Yeah, we lost you for a second, Bruce. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Anyway, so what I do is I make a point of taking pictures and selecting one from every month. Might be a wedding, might be just scenic, could be some sort of an event, could be a lot of different things. And then I put these together in calendars that, you know, you've made anywhere these days at the beginning of the year. And the reason why I just thought of this is that this year in particular, I started getting a lot of feedback, and I think this is the third year that I've given these calendars out, and people love them. They keep them, and they enjoy my pictures, and I don't know, it's just been a very rewarding thing, particularly this year, just because of the feedback that I've gotten from my kids and people. So I just thought I'd share that. If people are having trouble getting people to look at their pictures and, you know, I used to give them away, and it was like, oh, God, Dad's going to give us another picture. So, you know, it's just one of those things.
Do you put people's birthdays on the calendar?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. They always have a picture on their birthday and wet anniversaries. You can put as many pictures in the dates as you want without seeming to be any penalty. Yeah. And the calendars are really printed very nice. I mean, they have several different grades, but if you buy the little bit more expensive one, they're really nice. Yeah.
Well, the thing is that in addition to making a nice visual thing, you're giving them a gift of love. And so that's a big part of it as well. It's not like a very nice gift.
Yeah. You have your own birthday on there, Bruce?
I do.
A friend of mine years ago, Kurt Westbrook, I probably 20 years ago made this calendar, and suddenly he was starting to get birthday cards from people, and he couldn't figure out why. And then he realized, oh yeah, that's right, I put my birth date on the calendar.
Yeah.
So good. Thanks a lot. That's a good tip, isn't it, Jack?
And there are now, you can have photo books made as well, which is kind of interesting. I have way too many sentimental coffee mugs in my house, and what I'm going to be doing is taking pictures of the mugs and making up a mug book. And then getting rid of the bugs. Or so my wife tells me.
good idea. Craig in Lake Geneva, hello to you.
Hi. Yeah, I just have a general question on, well, basically, let me set this up. I do dental work. I do porcelain teeth. And what I need is a good macro camera and lens combination that's going to give me true color.
Mm-hmm. I think basically, if you were to look in my favorite reference book is the B&H photo catalog. There are a number of things. You don't have to get the most expensive digital SLR body because you're not going to be shooting high speed action, but you will need to buy a quality macro lens designed for that kind of close work, and most likely, and they're getting much, much less expensive, an LED ring light, a light that screws on the front of the lens and will make basically shadowless photography, because you're not going to be able to use a flash up on top of the camera.
Right.
And so that, I don't know exactly what price that combination would get you, but any of the major manufacturers of digital single-lens reflex cameras do make macro and micro lenses. And then if you go, for example, to the B&H catalog or other catalogs, look up ring lights, and you'll have a working situation.
Yeah, good tip. Okay. Thanks, Craig, for calling. Got a Facebook question from Daniel. I would like to make some simple stop-action clay motion type videos. I am not very computer literate. Can I string together a series of shots taken from my digital camera on a tripod without buying expensive computer programs?
I would think so. Now, it depends what your definition of expensive is. I use about a $79 video editing program. And it allows you to drop in the photos by just dragging them and dropping them into place. And if you were to put them right next to each other with no transitions, when you play the video, they would click right along and you would have that simulation. But I believe if you were to do a little bit of searching on the Internet, there are some stop motion production software specifically for that purpose. But either way, you can probably do that. You might even be able to do that with one of the Mac or Windows programs that they make, like Movie Maker or iMovie, to do the same thing. But it can be done. You don't have to spend a lot of money. You just put string those pictures on that little stream of film like it's a bunch of beads and let it go.
Let her go. Jack Socha, our guest, photography instructor and author of How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought, which is now just coming out with a second edition. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at some of the new developments in digital photography today with our guest, Jack Socha, photography instructor and author of How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. He's got a great website at acpress.com, acpress.com. You're going to find one of the things I like about his site is it's so much useful information, so many great tips. And, Jack, you keep updating that as well.
Yeah, I've kind of been restructuring it, and I took down some of the really, really old stuff, and I'm reformatting it to put it back on. So you'll see several articles there now, but in the coming few weeks, a lot of the old ones about getting ready for the big event and things like that will be reformatted and put in this new design website. It's a little bit easier to navigate, not so blocky looking and things like that, but also information on the book, on the classes. You can actually download a PDF file of the first several pages of the new book if you want to read the new introduction and the table of contents and all that. And I do have to ask your listeners I need your advice from your listeners, if I may.
Yeah.
I am working on the audiobook version of this. It's going to be audiobook with chapters and a reference a booklet. But I am not sure the best way of delivering it. I don't think I want to do an audio CD. I'm thinking of doing a CD with the MP3 files for the chapters, and then the reference also is a PDF and some kind of a little guide to it, so that people can transfer these onto their smartphones or their computer or their MP3 players. Mm. I welcome your listeners to drop a note to editor@acpress.com and tell me what you think of that. Would you like an audiobook version? And if so, what's the best way you would want to have it delivered so you would be able to play it?
Hmm. And where again do we go for that?
editor@acpress.com. There's a mention of it on the website as well.
Okay. Well yeah, we posted up on my Facebook page too.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Audio. I got my original world of publishing with audiobooks. We used to do What is Windows and What's a Modem and
yeah.
things like that. So our original company's name was Audio Computer Information. That's where the AC and AC Press came from. So we're
cool.
kind of going back to our roots.
All right. Tim and Eau Claire, you're next. Hi, Tim.
Hi. I'm wondering if anybody has developed anything that I can put into my old film camera that will effectively convert it to digital. It seems like there's plenty of room in there to do it, and all the mechanisms are in place to, you know, press buttons or whatever needs to happen. I'm just wondering if anybody has done that, and if so, where I can get it, and if not, why not?
Well, they tried that about 12 years ago. A company called eFilm came up with something. The trouble was, but by the time they developed, pardon the pun, the circuitry and the sensor and all this stuff, the cameras with built-in sensors were already way far ahead quality-wise. They never could play catch-up. If your camera has interchangeable lenses, the better choice might be to be able to find a camera body and an adapter that will put the lenses on your film lenses on your digital camera body. What kind of camera do you have?
It's a Minolta SRT-101.
Right. There may be possibly some adapters that would go on to some of these new interchangeable lens compact cameras that would let you use your lenses on a digital body, and that may be the shortest way to go.
Yeah. Makes good sense. Thanks, Tim, for calling. Appreciate it. Chris in Chippewa Falls. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I'm wondering if he would have any advice on how to solve the problem of a frozen memory card error.
Yeah.
We have a point-and-shoot power shot.
Mm-hmm. Well, have you taken the memory card out of the camera and tried to put it and read it on a computer?
No.
That's your first thing you should do. Is either many computers or laptops have a little slot for the SD card. If not, you can get an inexpensive thing called a card reader that plugs into the computer, and then you stick the card in, and it shows up on your computer screen. That is probably the first thing you would need. There are rescue programs that can reclaim photos, but you'd need to have that card in a computer to do it. So don't try to take any more pictures with it. Obviously, you can't, but take it out of the camera, put it in a safe place, and either, if you can't do it, find someone who knows about computers, put it in a computer and take a look at it. You may be able to retrieve the photos, reformat the card, and then you may be good to go, or at least get the pictures back.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and even then buying a new card, but you think the same card should work?
Well, frankly, if the card is faulty, you might be smarter to go out and buy a new one, because it's pretty...
Yeah, we tried a new one. That didn't work.
Yeah, but I would put that card in a safe place until you can get it into a computer.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Bill in Nina. Hello.
Hi. 12 years ago, my Canon G2 was an easy choice to make. Today they bring them out so fast you can't keep up with the new models. But I was wondering if you could compare the Canon SL1 and the Canon T5.
I have not had personal experience with those right now. I tend to rely on certain websites like Steve's Digicams, where they have very, very quickly reviewed these things. And these guys do know what they're talking about. I would not look at... consumer, you know, Amazon-type reviews, because you have to question how much the people know. But I would go to Steve's Digicams and take a look at that. I can't recommend either one because I have not personally used them. But I would suggest that as a good place to just see what they have to say.
I've gone to that site. Yeah, I've gone to that site. It's a good site.
Yeah, Steve's Digicams. Just do a search for it, and they have really done a remarkable job of keeping up with the current models and reviewing them. Also, some of the British photo magazines, those guys are merciless. So if you go to the online version of a British photo magazine, they'll rip something apart if they don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I settled on one, there's another one to replace it already.
Well, that's the problem.
Yeah, yeah. That was the joke in the book. We talk about you buy a camera in December and a higher resolution one comes out in January. That's the New Year's resolution.
Yeah. Thanks, Bill. Oh, boy. Gary and Boscobel, hello.
Thanks, Larry.
You bet.
Mr. Socha?
Yes.
I'd like to ask a question. I've got a Rebel T3 camera with a Canon EF 100 to 400 lens on it, and there's just a little tiny bit of play between the lens and the camera body, and wondering how I take that play out of there. It's maybe like a less than a 64th of an inch movement, which kind of bothers me. I don't know if it makes a difference in the picture. And then I have a question about photographing birds. I'm actually out doing wildlife photography right now, photographing bluebirds, and I get focused on them on the perch, trying to get photos of them in flight. And, of course, the automatic focus lens isn't quick enough. I get a split second to get a picture of that bird in flight when he leaves the perch. And I'm just wondering if this is an obstacle that can't be overcome. You can't pre-focus on where the bird's going to be once it moves into flight, and the camera doesn't autofocus quick enough to catch the bird's movement in flight. So,
yeah, the problem is if you had the $3,000 Canon, it will. But the other thing you could try to do is there should be a switch on your lens that switches from autofocus to manual, and you may try your best at doing that to see if you can get a shot. As far as the play is concerned, I would find someone else who has another Canon body and put the lens on there and see if the same problem exists, because you've got to figure out whether the play is coming from the lens or the camera body. And how you repair that, if necessary, sadly, I really can't tell you, and I'm afraid that you might find it might be rather expensive. But before you do anything, figure out whether the problem is the lens or the camera body.
The camera, yeah.
Yeah. But manual focus is still something you can use on those lenses.
Yep. There you go. Good luck. Thanks a lot, Gary, for calling. We had an email from Julie in Rice Lake. I read in Consumer Reports that March is the best time of the year to shop for cameras to get the best price. Is that your experience? Where does the new model year for cameras and equipment generally start?
Well, they usually introduce new models at the Consumer Electronics Show in January in Las Vegas. And so by March, the cameras do start showing up. However, if you are the first kid on the block to buy the brand new latest camera, you'll pay the most money for it. I tend to be one of these guys who I'm not that concerned about having the bleeding edge. I mean, for example, I'm just lusting after this little Fuji camera I just saw that is in the B&H catalog, the Finepix X20. It's configured like an old Leica rangefinder, but it's only 12 megapixels now, and it was $599. I'll bet you now, a few months later, I can get it for less than that, and I got a hint of my wife.
But there you go.
Yeah, you know, and also one thing we haven't covered is if you are shopping for these new models, you got to find out whether they are the correct legally imported version or the so-called gray market, which was meant to be sold overseas. That does affect your warranties.
Hmm.
A lot of things to consider.
Bevan Rhinelander, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi. I have a Canon Rebel XS, and I take pictures and then take the SD card to a kiosk machine and make hard copies of it. And there I can do a little tweaking on the kiosk machine, especially cropping. But before I do that, I like to view the pictures on my computer so that I can see them on a full screen and decide which ones I actually want to make copies of. What has happened in the past is I've looked at them on the computer, brought the card to Walgreens, to the kiosk machine, made my hard copies, then put the SD card back in the camera, and then I get a message on the monitor that says, cannot play back the image.
On the monitor of the computer?
On the monitor of the camera.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, here's what's going on. The camera, if you manipulate the file and you crop it or do something, generally speaking, the camera will not be able to read it. So what you should probably do is copy all your photos to the computer, make another, and then take that, put that onto a memory stick or something, and use that at the lab if you want to go back, because you will not be able to look at them on the camera. Yeah.
Right.
Now, as long as you're putting them on your computer, do me a favor. Go to my website, acpress.com. I still have an article up there called 5 Free Image Editing Programs, which I highly recommend. They're absolutely free. And try doing some of that editing at home first. I think you might enjoy it.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Good luck. Bev,
Thank you.
Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Boy, and you know, you mentioned gray market, and you know, it came to my mind that, you know, I'm not so sure if people are going to understand, if you're looking at a camera, how to tell whether it came from, whether it's a gray market camera or not.
Well, first thing you have to ask them is, may I see the warranty? Or what is it a USA warranty? And if it's, let's say, for example, if it's a Nikon camera and they say it is warranted by Nikon USA and they can show you this, that's fine. If they say, oh, it's actually warranted by, you know, Cameras R Us or whatever,
yeah,
some third party, then you know they brought it into the country not through the normal distributor, and the normal distributor will not service it.
Okay.
And so if they say, you know, and sometimes if you deal with some of these big firms, they used to be the big ones in New York all the time. They say, "Do you want the regular market or green market?"
Oh.
Yeah. So that's the trick, is that they will sometimes find a camera that was just meant to be sold in Germany, and they'll get a better deal because of exchange rates and bring them over here. But generally speaking, the American distributor is not going to honor the warranty on them because it's not something they bought.
Well, that's good information to have in your back pocket, Jack.
Yeah. We actually are going to have a one-night class simply to help people pick their next camera, because we've seen people buy the wrong camera time after time. So Bob and I both attend all the classes together. It's a two-man show. And we ask people, what are your intentions? What do you want to photograph? Do you understand what the limitations are of the camera you're looking at? And so we think that's going to be a popular class, because it could save a person a lot of trouble and maybe even a lot of money.
Yeah, absolutely.
So having a lot of fun with the classes. Bob is a tremendous guy, a great photographer. I've worked with him for years, and we're hoping this will do real well in town. And again, there's a big vacuum in western Wisconsin as far as getting. We're trying to fill that hole that was left behind.
Well, Jack, and again, people go to your website, acpress.com. They're going to find out all the information about...
A lot of stuff going on.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jack Socha, our guest. Again, at acpress.com, he has a lot of great educational material and a lot of downloads, free downloads that you can take advantage of. And, you know, I think you should. I think you should take a look at least. I hope you'll stay tuned, though, because coming up at 11:45, we'll find out from the weather guys if March is going to come in like a lion and go out like a lamb. Right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.